and so on. Let me try and just make sure that my...
I'm sorry, Dennis, I didn't hear any of that.
So. Oh. Can you hear me?
Oh, yep, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for posting the agenda and the minutes and so on. I've added to the agenda item 8 agenda for our Wednesday conference call with the coordination team, which I think we need to at least run through on this call. So assuming that there's no objection to the agenda, we have the minutes of the previous meeting, which have been circulated, and I didn't see an objection to that. So, Hayley, will you bring us very quickly through the outstanding action items, both from the 23rd and the 28th?
Okay, so this is from the Monday meeting last week.
Yeah.
Dave, you to review Alexi's email and respond.
That's done.
Steve, complete and send the car meeting at the meetings to BBWG.
That was done, right. Yeah.
Andrew, second draft of terminology definitions document.
Yeah, that's done.
Patrick, update text on security considerations with reference to two Unicode documents.
Yeah, I had a call with Karen shortly after last week's call, and I think that addressed... I think that's done, but if I'm mistaken, I will follow up.
Actually, looking at my notes, we did all these on Wednesday.
Yes.
The one that I had outstanding was...
Exactly.
Number 5, okay, so which is Steve to summarize recordings from Dakar and send to me. Still not done that. Okay, so therefore I've not done number 6, which was to compile them. When
did
you have those by,
Kate? Sorry, I keep biting my
tongue on that. Well, yours is the last one. Everybody else has done theirs.
I know. So I can do it now.
Today?
Yeah.
End of today?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll change that to Monday then. Okay. And then the other ones that I've got outstanding are number 8, which is... Francisco, follow up on adding Unicode MC categories as allowed in the applicant guidebook.
That's been
done. Yeah.
Good time.
Okay.
Thanks,
Francisco.
That
was done to the draft and then
to the ACP also? So this is Francisco. The draft was updated, but the guidebook has not been published. I don't know if we want to keep that or...
Right, but the issue is resolved as far as this team.
Okay.
I don't think we need to keep it on the list.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, right.
Okay, and then...
But I thought somebody has to get the... Like, doesn't it require a board a resolution, though?
Well, there's a change process published for the guidebook, and there are a few categories of changes, so... some things that which would, you know, and there's a set of questions that you answer to determine whether something is a material change, which in which case it needs to go to the board. So it's not every, every update.
Oh, I see. Got it.
Okay, and do we want this change to be in, want to see this change in the guidebook, and is someone looking after it, Karen?
Yes.
Grand, move on. Haley?
Okay, Kim, first draft of user experience.
Well, so that was done, and then subsequent to that, Nayla, I think, did most of the work on the weekend.
So under Francisco's direction, they
were joining. Francisco and Nayla conspired over the weekend to actually produce something good. So that's Nayla can update us on.
We'll come to that, but that's done as far as this action list is concerned.
Yeah, and the next number 10 was the Postal 6 summary analysis, so enclosed before us for the public comments. That was mine. That's all now done.
Case study liaisons to review team analysis of comments and report if anything needs to be changed, revised in the draft report. From what I've seen, everybody's done that and nothing needs revising. Kim, IDM policy survey compilation. Ask Leo or someone to help.
Yes, so we asked Leo, he was not able to help, but ultimately we were able to find a resource that could help, and she produced a compilation on Friday. The only catch is she doesn't have any idea what it was she was summarising, so Francisco and I have the draft compilation, and I guess at some point today we need to review it for accuracy.
An action item for you and Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have the draft of the group by the end of today.
Excellent. Before finishing, though, with this action list, the meeting notes from the Saturday session, what are we going to do with that? Whose responsibility is now that when we have them compiled, Haley, to go through them and see if there's anything that we have missed?
Don't know. There has been no talk on that. As far as I was aware, I was just going to compile them all and post them. I didn't know there was anything beyond
all right.
that.
So put that down as an action. We have to decide who takes responsibility for that, because there's no point in doing all this work unless we go through it and see whether there's anything that we need to note that we haven't already noted. Francisco, what do you think?
So this is to review the notes from
yes.
the...
Yeah.
So we're looking for a volunteer, right?
Well, I think we are looking for someone to skim through those notes and just make sure that we haven't missed anything.
Okay.
No.
Nayela, is this something that you could do?
No, not this week or next week. I'm sorry, I'm really swamped next week.
All right. So will a volunteer please step forward?
How about you, Haley? Do you think you could do it?
Yeah, sure, I can read them, but I don't really know what I'm looking for.
That's the problem. We need someone who understands where we are on the report, just to check that there's nothing we have missed.
So Dennis, I have a question.
Yeah.
How is this with relation to the integrated report? Do we need to focus on the integrated report first? Or this needs to be a piece that will feed into the integrated report?
I would have presumed that since this was our first session on the integrated report, it feeds into the integrated report. But if we've got away with it without doing this in detail so far, let's put it aside. But let's just remember, let's make a note, Haley, that at some point we need to go through these notes and make sure that we're not missing anything that was discussed at length in Dakar that we haven't picked up on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dennis, this is Karen. Can I add a point?
Yes, please.
It seems like what we really need out of this is, you know, we're preparing for the face-to-face meeting, so it would be good to have some bullet points or something just to refresh, you know, so we remember what we talked about in Dakar.
Yes.
You know, as people are bringing up things, well, you know, we agreed, whatever. So I think that's the purpose of it. That doesn't help, you know,
that
get it done.
That doesn't help our time pressure. So can I ask you to discuss this internally and try and find out someone who's enough time to run through these new notes and do exactly as Karen has said, produce a couple of bullet points so that we know, so that when we meet face-to-face, we can say, well, we addressed this and agreed, or I think we agreed in Dakar. This has been overtaken by events on the discussion on the email list. I suspect that everything that we discussed in Dakar has been overtaken by events,
yeah.
But I just don't want to get caught out.
Yep. So we'll discuss it internally.
Okay. It's given that I suspect that everything that was discussed has been further discussed on the mailing list, I don't see it as a high priority item, but we need to check. All right, I'll leave it with you. And Karen, maybe you'd follow up on that.
Okay.
Haley, go back to you and the actions from the 30th of November, from last Wednesday.
Okay, the last two were mine, and they're both done. So that's all of the action items from the 28th.
Right.
So do you want me to go through the ones from the 30th, which was the staff one on Wednesday?
Yes, please.
Okay, Steve, these are writing assignments, and they were due to Karen over the weekend. Steve offered a volunteer to develop sectional visual similarity based on that day's discussions. Is that done?
I think that's done.
I think that's done. Well done, too.
Andrew, terminology, we'll use current version
and review against report at a later stage.
Sorry, I couldn't understand what you just said.
Terminology. The action item, I guess, is we'll use the current version and review it against the report at a later stage. So something to do with terminology.
Right. So we were doing that, and it turns out that I seem to have sent some corrupted version or something. So what Karen had to integrate with wasn't what it should have been. So I've just sent the properly updated version, I think.
Good. Okay. Next.
Andrew again, and write up text for whole strings issue. Oh, it says it's already done.
Yep.
Okay. Francisco, update the whole string section with text from Andrew.
That's done.
Andrew, we'll work on the Unicode issues for other related issues section.
Yep.
Okay. Francisco, we'll work on application and OS issues and dispute resolution processes included already covered in an operation section.
That's done.
Okay. Nayella, to work on user experience, those are what needs to go into the work Kim and Steve did on user experience text. Yeah. Nicholas, to provide a case studies overview.
Nicholas, that's well underway. I think I've seen...
It's done. Can you not hear me?
No, you disappeared suddenly. Disappeared.
Oh, sorry. Well, I did shout out done. I submitted it last night, and it's already been incorporated in Karen's omnibus edition.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well done. Excellent, everybody. The next item on the agenda is the status of the IDN policy survey, which we've basically covered. Except what are we going to do with this policy survey, Kim, when we have it? And how does it relate to our report?
This is Francisco. Can I comment?
Please, Francisco, go ahead.
So I think this the results of this should be an appendix on the report. And this is we may be able to draw some interesting conclusions from that survey. One of those, for example, that no registry is implementing a whole string level variants.
Right. Okay. So we need to make a note that we will review this for those insights at some point.
Yes, we need to produce the this appendix for inclusion in the next version of the report, I guess.
Yeah. So who has that action? Kim, are you going to take that action to produce that appendix?
Sure.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda was any other updates, including face-to-face. What was intended here, Haley?
I'm sorry. I missed what you said.
Item 5 on our agenda, any other updates, including face-to-face. What was intended here?
That was just, remember we broke this meeting into a little administrative part and then working on that's just that part.
Okay, well, are there any other updates?
Well, what we have to update here is that admin is coming. Admin.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And,
yeah.
So that's it.
Excellent. All right, thank you. Next item on the agenda is JavaScript test of dname.
Oh, I can speak a little bit more on that.
Please.
So this is a bar conversation that Andrew, Joe, and I had in the car. So the idea, I think Francisco was also in that conversation. The idea was we did the dname test in a captivated, controlled environment. And one of the things is to measure, like in real deployment, how dname will impact like root servers in terms of load and other things. And Joe came up with this idea of embedding some JavaScript banners on various websites, and queries to that would set up some kind of a test environment that can measure real time. So this is a idea that we had. I guess it was recently resurfaced on the mailing list.
Right.
So
And is it a priority for us, or where are we on that?
Andrew, you want to comment? Personally, I don't think it's a priority now. I think the priority.
Well, I don't know if it's a priority for this group, but yeah. If there is some way of saying, like, I don't think it actually needs any feedback from us either, right? Joe said that he talked to John Dickinson. John Dickinson is ready and willing to do this. What it would actually need is sort of support, I guess, within ICANN in order to find the cash to pay John. But I think it would be an excellent idea because it one of the problems that people have had is that they don't know the extent to which any of these novel things that we're talking about will actually work on the Internet. And so if you wanted to know whether DNAME would work in a root zone, given that you've got, you know, test zones there and you've got DNAMEs and so on, you could do real tests with it, and you could get real results from real resolvers on the real Internet rather than stuff that was done in a lab.
Right. Okay, so this sounds like something that we might come out as a recommendation of our solution phase, which is what I'm now mentally calling calling the next phase of this project, that we recommend that this testing be done.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, excellent. So we'll leave that until then. And lastly, not lastly, but next is discuss the integration report and drafts to VIP open.
Okay.
I don't know what this means. Ask John Clenson to review, which I've responded to in the email. Karen, do you want to pick up the thread here and tell us where we are and what our next for the report?
Okay. Thank you. So if you recall from last week, we committed to try to send the coordination team, our current compiled draft for them to review and to use as a basis for discussion at the face-to-face meeting. So what we want to do here is determine what changes or adjustments need to be made before we actually send that out to them. So I circulated a draft to everybody last night, and I highlighted a few things that I had questions about, and then people are welcome to raise other things that they may have noticed.
Okay, so will you bring us through each section and each of your questions?
Okay. The questions are, the major questions are in my email. So I don't necessarily have a question on every section.
Sure, okay.
But the first one was the terminology, which perhaps is somewhat addressed by the fact that I was using an incomplete document. But I wondered whether, we've got the terminology at the beginning in Section 3, which seemed to me to break up the flow a little bit. I thought it was possible to make that an appendix or have it later in the report. I guess that the answer to that depends a little bit on what the objectives are for it. I think we agreed last time we were just going to use this as a placeholder and we would need to eventually review the report and make sure we were using terms consistently and that the terminology used matched what we use in the report, but there did seem to be a lot of references to existing definitions that didn't exactly work in all cases for what we wanted, and maybe that's just because I was looking at an old document, but. I guess maybe we don't need to resolve get into the details of the section now, but just wondered if people have thoughts on the placement of it.
Okay, well, let's discuss that. Andrew, do you want to lead off on this?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what to say. what did you have in mind?
Let me just ask. Do you feel strongly that it needs to be at this position in the report?
I do not. No.
Okay.
That was perhaps why I was confused, because like I don't care what it is.
Okay.
Well.
Does anyone else?
Well,
it's Karen.
Yes.
Patrick, I have a general question, not about the placement of this, but of in the report, but of a placement of one of the sections of within three.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why you have table, repertoire, and sets before labels, TLDs, names, and strings? Because when I first started looking at this, it seemed like those two were out of order. Maybe it's a minor point. I was reading it, you know, wondering what some of these things were, and the definitions were later, mm-hmm. and if maybe those two sections were switched, it might help.
So this is Andrew. I actually can't answer that. What the evolution of this document, you may remember, Manal, apparently on her way from the hotel to the airport, so she's way more productive than I am in Dakar, rearranged all of this. So that it was according to these categories. Now, I'm not actually happy with most of these categories, but when I'd asked about it before, nobody said anything about it, so we've left it alone. But my overall feeling about this is what I said last week, which is I think that, you know, we seem to have coalesced on some definitions. And ideally, we're using those definitions consistently throughout the document. So what I think we need to, and now it turns out actually that the document that Karen was working from, the set of definitions, was not actually the one I thought I'd sent all of you. So that's a problem. But apart from that, it seemed to me that that the best thing to do would be to try to make sure that we were using these consistently, and then come back once the rest of the text is in pretty good shape, in order to refine these definitions and make sure that they're in an order that makes sense to people. So even the question about exactly where these belong in the document, I was being a little flip earlier when I said I don't care where they go. My real feeling is that it will become fairly natural how we deal with this set of terminology once we have the rest of the document in shape. But there are places throughout the document, according to my review so far, which is about halfway done, where we're clearly not being consistent with the terminology, and I think that is something that we're going to have to pay more attention to.
Okay, thank you. What I'd like to suggest is that it would, if it's breaking up the flow and I can see exactly how that works, that we do make it as an appendix, but then we need to have a clear way of flagging the use of terminology throughout the report so that people can see that this is a defined term, and the usual way of that is capitalizing it, and can reference the appendix. So, Andrew, I guess that'll come from your review, and what we need to agree, Karen, is how we flag defined terms throughout the document, so when somebody's reading it, they can recognize, yes, that's a defined term, and I can find out if I've forgotten exactly what it means by going to this appendix.
Right.
That's a good idea.
Does that convention suits everybody?
I think that's...
Can I make one point about the terminology? This is Nicholas here. The terms occur in a certain order, which is explained historically, I suppose, because it sort of set out the thinking. It probably originally goes back to Andrew, I don't know. But ultimately, I suppose, they're going to be listed alphabetically, are they, if people actually want to look up a term when they're reading along?
Well, that's a consequence of what I'm suggesting, that it's an appendix and just alphabetic definitions.
Yeah.
But, of course, that will then make it difficult for people to understand the terms in their own beautiful interrelations, which was where I came in on this project. People were discussing terminology all the time. But I didn't know there was something lost there.
I thought about that quite a bit. after the discussion, both at that time and also the discussion that we've had with the various teams, because several of the teams complained about the order. Because you'll remember that we ultimately decided that the first version that we sent around to the teams was in alphabetical order. Mm. And many people complained about that because they said they couldn't understand it without, you know, I mean, reading alphabetical order, it isn't the order in which you need to encounter the terms. It seemed to me that the only way to fix that is to use this invention. It's sort of newfangled hypertext that we could put links.
My goodness.
We would put links back and forth between these things. So I don't care which order. Probably the order in which things end up being in an appendix or whatever is alphabetic, so that when you print it, if you printed the document and you're referring to it back and forth, you can look it up. But then you could have a sort of reader's guide that says, you know, well, here's, if you don't understand any of these terms, then here's how you need to understand how they fit together. And then you have the definitions in there, each one in a rough paragraph, sort of saying, here are the ways that these are related to one another. Again, I think that that's something we write at the very end once we've got a complete picture, because some of these terms, I think, are just going to drop out.
Mm-hmm. So are you also suggesting that hypertext might be a way of flagging a definition in the document?
We could do that, except that Word support for that is so bad that I would hesitate to use it.
I mean,
maybe Karen's experience is different, in which case I'm happy to feed her, you know, raw text or something, and she can put it in. But my experience of Word's features for this is that, you know, doing it by hand with HTML markup would be easier.
Yeah. So let's just go around the table. What I think we're saying is that we will flag the terminology as it's used throughout the report in some way to be determined, and that will refer to an appendix, which may be organized in two ways. One, something logical way, with hypertext links to an alphabetic appendix of each term. Steve, does that make sense to you?
I want to go simple and just keep it alphabetic. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ayla?
I don't really have any strong feelings. I sat through the discussions of alphabetic is confusing when it's not in the groups that they belong to, and it kind of makes sense, but maybe alphabetic is how I would go look for a term in an appendix.
Yeah.
And we should only expect the same from the users, I guess, because I'm an average user. I can speak for the whole Internet users.
Pointing out also that, I mean, we are articulating the discussions to start with in terms of terms because we didn't have anything else to talk about. Now we've got all these concrete issues, and the report actually reads that you're thinking about one concrete issue after another. And when you want to understand that issue, you go and look at the relevant terms. So in some sense, the structure in which the terms were put out in the first place is not so important anymore.
I think that's right, Nicholas. Anybody else want to comment on this?
This is Francisco.
Go ahead.
I think appendix and alphabetic is the right way to go.
Okay, Karen, so that's guidance for the moment. Take it out, make it an appendix, and then work with Andrew, I guess, to come up with recommendation about how terms are flagged as defined terms throughout the document, in particular first instance.
This is Francisco. If there was not enough time to do that for this draft, I think we can leave with that.
Oh, we can, yes. We can. This can go after... after our face-to-face meeting.
One more thing about the terminology. I think we are including all the terms from all the reports. I'm not sure that's a good idea. I think we should include only the terms that we need for this report.
Agreed. This should
yep.
This should be an appendix defining the terms that we use in our report.
Right.
So, Karen, does that deal with that point?
Yes, I think so. Thank you. So what I'll do for today is I'll take the correct Andrew text and use it as an appendix. but we won't go through the organization or content in preparation for this draft. We will leave that till we can do it in conjunction with the review of the terminology.
Yeah.
Okay?
Next point.
Okay. Next point is Section 5. This is broadly titled Establishing... Hold on, let me get to the page here. Establishing variant labels. And this is my, we've had this ongoing discussion about how we distinguish variant issues from those about visual similarity. And so I was sort of, I was struggling to fit that into the text, even though I like the section, I think it's exactly right. So I guess I'm looking for people's opinions here on Section 5. We've got, it's broadly titled Establishing Variant Labels, and it's intended to be about all the issues about how you determine if something is a variant or not. We go through this, the options for the label generation policy, then go into a discussion of how you determine or how you can make a distinction between visually similar characters and variant characters. We go through whole string issues, and then we briefly, I thought there was another section in here. And there's a little bit about cross-script visual similarity. So the order it goes right now is label generation policy, what's visually similar versus what's a variant, a little bit about cross-script visual similarity, and then the discussion about whole string issues.
So what is missing for you as a reader? Is this an introduction to explain and a set of conclusions to summarize what the conclusions are?
Well, for me, it's not obvious what the ties are between these topics. So, the label generation policy options are very clear. And you go into, maybe it's just me that's not seeing the connection. But I think if I were coming to this, as a new reader, I'd be going into a new issue in this section when we jump into visual similarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Karen, I agree with you. I think, when I'm writing up the visual similarity section, that's also one of my questions, how does this fit in? And, I share exactly where you're thinking, so I'm just trying to think how maybe... Yeah, I don't have a good idea right now, but I recognize with you that is indeed a problem that disrupts the flow and kind of sometimes unclear.
So like a Venn diagram, so there's a large area of intersection between variants and similar strings, but there's variants that aren't similar and similar strings that aren't variants, so it makes sense to talk about them in this report because...
Okay.
There's likely to be confusions over the term, so it's important to highlight the differences that variants are these things springing out of language tables, and similarity is a thing handled in another way to avoid confusion.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is producing a Venn diagram. Variables, similarity.
Or at least when we write the words, we can think about it in terms of whether we want to produce it that way. I have no idea what the overlap is.
Okay.
We're talking about it infinitely, Danny.
This is Andrew. I think I also understand the concern here. I think that actually right at the beginning of Section 5, there is some additional... overview text for the section that needs to be written. If we can get the subsections clear, and also if we can get word to recognize that some of these are subsections. I hope somebody here is good with Word, because I am not. Then we could get, we could have an overview that says, like, here is how we're going to break these things down into the various subtopics. And once you have that laid out at the beginning, then the shift between the different pieces might not be quite so jarring, because you'd know how they were going to fit together.
I think that's right, Andrew. Dennis here. I think that's right. I used to be excellent with Word and sections until they made it smart and it does things automatically, and now I find myself fighting with it most of the time to say, no, stop doing that, please.
Yeah, as well, among other things, we've got two sections, 5.2, no section 5.3,
yeah.
And 5.4 isn't actually a subsection according to the cross-referencing code.
Okay, well, that's probably my fault.
I don't think it is. I think it's Word's fault.
Okay, Karen, do we have to address that now? This is obviously something for us to read and reread and see if we can come up with some approach that makes the whole section clear.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have to come up with it now, or is it okay for the moment?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think the team is across the issues, and they'll know what we're talking about in each of the sections. It's more of a big picture, to improve the report, we need to set that section up a little bit better.
Right. So I agree with Andrew. I think we need an introductory big picture section and maybe a short summary at the end.
Yep.
So you might stick those in, sort of introduction, explaining what we're doing, and last section, conclusions.
Okay.
And just leave it blank for the moment, just as placeholders.
Okay, what is hopefully a helpful question. There are various points from Karen, notes, comments from Karen all the way through, saying things, and some of them are a reference to text that I've written, where it doesn't seem to be clear enough to the general reader what I meant. Now, in order to answer those questions, should we just send a little email to Karen saying, please insert the following text on the following page? Is that the way you want to have your updates done, or is there a better way of doing it?
Karen, what do you think?
That would be fine.
Good.
So what you just described would be fine.
So if there's a specific reference or comment or query in the text relating to something that somebody has written, then that individual should respond to you and say, this is what I thought I meant. Yeah?
Yep.
Good.
Yeah, and I'm not particular as to what format that comes. Just
text.
Getting clarification from whoever the...
All right.
Okay.
Point three.
All right. Point three was the user experience section, which we discussed a bit this weekend. Currently, there's no text in the report. So I think, and what I got from the discussion is there's more work that we want to do before we present this to the team. So I guess the option I would suggest is we send the report without that section, but we do, if possible, try to circulate some text on that for that people would have time to read before the face-to-face meeting.
And I think we're fairly well on our way there, aren't we, from what I've read on the list?
If I can jump in here. So this is the Francisco, Karen, and I talked about this, and then Andrew helped us on the weekend also. I think this is where Kurt has been encouraging us to go with the user experience for a long time. We just didn't see it coming, it didn't come together until this weekend. And Francisco even took the questions further and wanted to focus more on, what does the user expect, and if they expect two labels to act the same, what happens? If they expect them to act the same but they're not, then what happens? Et cetera. So I think we can flesh this out in a lot better, but we need Steve, Francisco, Andrew, and I to sit together and have this do it soon to have a good section. We're kind of running out of time if we want this before the face to face.
This is Francisco. Can I comment?
Please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So I I was thinking that we should have some text for discussion on the Wednesday meeting. So what I'm trying to say is we should advance the discussion starting this Wednesday and not wait until the face-to-face meeting.
So do you want to have... Sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Do you want to have a meeting this afternoon? And get something out tomorrow, early morning our time at the latest?
Yeah.
I think that would be very helpful. Sorry for cutting across you, Francisco, because I think you're right that this is one of the topics that we need to discuss with the coordination team on Wednesday. So back to you, Francisco.
No, I think we are in agreement. We are saying the same thing.
So is it possible, Nayana, to have a meeting this afternoon at your time?
Francisco, Andrew, Dave?
So I was thinking we have the high-level idea of how to attack the issue. I don't know what others think, but at least Andrew, Naela, I think Karen and me are on the same page. Well, also Dennis, I remember that email. So if we're in agreement that that's the right way to go, then perhaps we can already have someone to write it, and perhaps Andrew will be the right person to ask.
Well, Andrew stepped away from the phone at the moment due to some priority interrupt, so we'll come back on that. So you're not proposing then to have a call this afternoon?
No, I was saying that we could already ask Andrew to go ahead and draft, but if people think there is already things to discuss, sure, let's have that discussion, but I would suggest to have it immediately after this meeting.
I think that's right. I think this is the most urgent item, and I think if you could, and maybe we'll cut this call short and you actually go straight into that discussion to stimulate the an initial document for Wednesday. Okay, we'll ask Andrew when he comes back. So continue on to the next one, Karen.
Okay, the next one is the other related issues section. So this came from Francisco, and I wasn't sure actually now that I'm thinking about it. Francisco, did what you sent include Andrew's portion on Unicode?
No.
Oh, okay. So I need to add that. All right, I didn't include that in what I sent. But we have a sort of bigger picture issue where there seemed to be agreement that this section is not especially useful in the report, that most of the issues brought up by the team had to do with usability of IDN TLDs or IDNs in general rather than anything specific to variants. So opening up that possibility, do we need a quote, other related issues section, or is there anything else that's not already covered in the other sections that we need to highlight?
So if I could come in on that.
Steve, go ahead.
Francisco and I had a discussion on this, that some of the reports, the issues they raise is not specific Baron issues, but it's in general IDN issues.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
I was thinking, I think if they raise these issues, these are real issues. Perhaps if we narrowly scope our project, it's not within our scope. But in a grand scheme of things, these are the things that need to be solved to ensure a good user experience that's also in line with our mission. So I was wondering, so I'm not advocating to include it in the main text, but I was thinking maybe in the appendix saying, you know, these are some of the important IDN-related issues, you know, that needs to be addressed somehow, but it's we consider currently out of the scope of our report, so that we at least bring these issues out for other people in other organizations that need to solve them. So that would be my point. Thanks.
Steve, I think that's a good suggestion. Francisco?
Yeah, this is Francisco. I'm not sure I agree with Steve's suggestion. I think they are clearly out of scope because they are not related to variants. And the other thing why would I hesitate to include this on the report is the text from the case study reports, which mainly comes from the Arabic and Devanagari teams, is not particularly well developed, in my opinion. And we don't have time to go in deep into the issues that they mentioned. I was saying in an email, these are, from my opinion, at best hints that there may be issues there, but just that they are not really good technical discussions on the issues. I would really hesitate to include the text that the teams are providing.
Okay.
Well, one way of dealing with that is simply to have a very short section that says there were a variety of other issues raised in the case study reports, you know, see appendix, and none of these are specific to IDN variants. All of these are related to IDNs in general, but nothing specific to IDN variants. And, you know, the reader is referred to this appendix.
This is Andrew. I have to agree with the second part, especially, though, of what Francisco was saying. These are sort of mentions of the issues without actually explaining how they work or anything like that. And every one of them has about, you know, sort of a chiligon's worth of sticky corners that any one of which could cause fairly serious difficulties, and each one of which is going to be difficult in this or that community. For instance, the issue about upper versus lower case, sort of more generally, rather than the variant examples that we get because of Greek and some other places, but in sort of more generally, that issue is just a big problem because we've trained people for years to think that upper and lower case is sort of meaningful in labels for display purposes and such like, and IDN breaks that. But nobody who writes Arabic cares about that because they don't have that problem.
Andrew,
it's a large set of those kinds of problems. I don't
Andrew,
think we have the space to expand on it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just quick. The case folding issue, it's on the user experience section, not on this section, because there may be user expectations that case folding may continue to work as somehow as IDN 2003 from to 2008. So that's on the user experience section, not on this section.
So there are two different things here. One of which is this user experience stuff, and actually I was going to argue when we got to that the that issue, for instance, ought to be removed from the user experience stuff because it's a problem, but it's a problem with IDNs. It's not a variant problem. It has implications for the variant stuff because of what things we might want to do, which is actually the entire basis for the Greek argument in favor of the tonos and final form sigma is this case issue. So it has implications, but I mean all of these things, the things about fonts, the things about normalization and different environments and what happens when you go across environments and you cut and paste, what happens with office suites that don't understand about IRIs versus URIs. All of this stuff is serious problems, but none of it is directly related to variants, I think. And I mean, we could produce a document easily as long as the one we have about these issues. So I think it actually does a disservice. I think this is what I was really trying to say. It does a disservice to sort of raise them without actually explaining what they are in any kind of detail. And it seems to me for that reason it shouldn't be included.
If I could come in.
Please, Steve.
So listening to the pros and cons, here's my suggestion. I think we need to produce a report that's very defensible. So everything we say that we can defend, you know, sufficiently. So if these, and also these issues, general IDN issues, seems to be falling the category of, you know, encourage the adoption of IDNs, universal acceptability of IDNs. So maybe I could take an action item to, we take it off the table, take it off the document, I'll take an action item to review and rework on them, and maybe send it to Naella and that you're working on the universal acceptability.
Kurt is setting up a project on TLD acceptance, and these are things we could contribute to that project.
For sure.
Yeah. Yep.
So sorry, Steve, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. My only concern is that since these were raised in the case study reports, I would at least like to have an appendix where, however tersely these issues are listed, even if they're listed, you know, these are general IDN related, not specific to variants, and they've been taken off the table, but note here are the ones that were listed in the case study reports. And, you know, it'll be taken up in a different project. Just for completeness, I think that would be appropriate.
This is Steve. So that's fine. The only thing I worry is when we send it out to public comment and people will attack on those sections and saying, you know, those are ill-conceived and, you know, not well thought through. And so we need to put a very strong disclaimer in that stack saying, you know, these are not really our product. This is what the team has raised.
Yes, I agree.
Well, this is Nicholas here. Aren't we only going to say these are aspects which need to be considered in a full set of solutions? So actually you are not making yourself particularly easily criticized in this, unless people are going to say, well, this is just hand-waving, and they're not being sufficiently explicit to be helpful here.
I would
tend to support what Dennis is proposing as at least mentioning these things as placeholders. Especially if, as I think I've inferred, we're going to have the case study report as an appendix to this integrated report, are we? They will appear in extenso.
Sorry, what, Nicola?
Are the case study reports going to appear in full form as an appendix to this integrated report?
No, I think no. Strongly, no.
I seem to infer from what Dennis was saying earlier that they would be, but...
Well, there certainly will be references to them, so...
Yes, I put lots of references to them. I just wondered how easy it would be for people to actually take up the references.
I don't think we need to bulk up the report with the actual text. We just need an appendix with a list of references. I just think that it would be very strange if we ignored a whole set of issues that were alluded to by the case studies without alluding to them in our report, even if we say these are general IDN-related issues, not specific to variants, and there's another project to deal with these. These have not been thought through and are not addressed in this report.
This is Francisco. Can I comment?
Please, Francisco.
So I don't... I'm probably missing something. I don't see why we need to include everything that was included in the case study reports. If they went and discussed things that are out of scope of the project, we don't need to include them. And the fact that these issues have already been published by the case studies, since they have already been published, I don't see why we need to copy them again in this integrated report. The issues are already there and already public. Probably the only thing that is missing is to forward these issues, this list of issues, and with the caveat saying these are potential issues or something like that, and send it to this other project, the Universal Acceptance project, so they can take them and do whatever is needed. I'm probably saying something like that to the case studies that produce those issues, so they know where their issues are being taken care of, or at least considered.
Yeah, I hear what you say. Let me think about it a bit more. I do feel that it's not so much that they're out of scope as they're not specific to variants, but they relate to all IDNs, including variants. They were raised by the case studies, and I think that if we do fend them off to another project, we should say so and be quite clear about it in our report. But that's my view, and if nobody agrees, that's fine.
Well, I have a suggestion for a mechanism here. We could create an appendix that says, here were issues that were raised in some report. We provide the references, and then it's a one sentence thing. The conclusion that we drew was that these were, maybe related to IDNs or not, but they were not directly related to the issue of variants, or we couldn't understand how they were, and so we didn't treat them here.
Sure.
And then you don't have to say we sent them somewhere else or something like that. We just say, we are aware that these were raised. We didn't ignore that, but we didn't treat them here because we didn't know what to do with them. And then we don't have the problem that Steve was suggesting that, the stuff hasn't been really properly treated. Francisco is, I think, in some ways right that we're saying, we don't really want to say anything about them. So that last sentence is a way of saying we are on purpose not saying anything about them.
Okay, does that then completely denude the other issues section of relevant material?
Well, this is Karen. The one question I have about that is there's a piece that Andrew wrote on Unicode issues, which I apologize, I thought was already included in Francisco's, but it wasn't, so it doesn't appear in the report right now. But does that looks like it might be a little bit specific to variants, is it?
The more I thought about it while I was writing, the less I thought that it was.
Okay.
And I think that anything that is in there that is really seriously related to this is either going to be covered in the similarity stuff or will be covered in the user experience stuff. So
okay.
I think we can put all of that aside and just not worry about it.
Okay.
So this section becomes a very short section saying, see appendix, we didn't really treat these seriously. They were raised, they'll be dealt with elsewhere. They are not specific to variants, they are general to IDM TLDs. Yes.
Okay. So we'll add a paragraph like that. Does anyone want to write that, or do you want me to?
Well, why don't you write it, Karen? I think it's
right.
Short and sweet.
Sure, I'll do that. Okay.
So point five, I think
point
we can answer.
Can I come?
Sorry, is that Francisco?
Yes. So the visual similarity issue was mentioned again, and I just remember something that I'm not sure we have talked about. We're trying to flag visual similarity as a different issue to variants, and we probably. Since there has been a lot of discussion of this issue and there are some particular suggestions on how to improve the visual similarity process, shouldn't we talk about that? I'm not sure if that was included in this part. I haven't had time to read it. Just remember that. And is this already covered?
This is Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
So in that visual similarity section I wrote is I outlined some options, and one option is improve visual similarity process. For example, some script communities may be able to generate a table and then use that the visual similarity process take into consideration of that table. So to that extent, it's discussed. Are you suggesting it to be elevated to a major like a major section of points? That is that what you're suggesting?
No.
Okay. So in that case, it's addressed.
Okay. So before we go on to your point five, let's go back to the user experience, because Andrew, while you were off the call, we decided you were the perfect person to write this up.
Excellent. All right. That's okay. I sort of have committed on the weekend to work some more on it. So after I've done my first pass through this, I am about halfway through, I think. So I'll send that, and then I'll try to, or maybe actually just in one, I may do it as I go through. I don't know, but I'll churn something up by the end of the day.
Right. We were also talking about cutting this call short and having a bit you and Francisco and Naila and maybe others having a quick talk about this, because the idea is that we really should get something about the user experience out quickly so that it can be an agenda item for our conference call on Wednesday.
Yes, I agree.
So maybe we'll try and finish shortly. And you can talk about this on this call. All right, Karen, back to you, item five.
Okay, this last point is not really something we need to settle right now, but as I was going through, I noticed that, when we refer to a specific character, like the Te Marbuda or the Schwa or, various things, we kind of have different ways of referring to things. Sometimes we name the character or sometimes we use the Unicode notation, and sometimes we use the glyph, sometimes we use a combination of those three. So as part of finishing this, we'll want to go through and make sure we have a way of referring to characters that's consistent and makes sense.
Right. I think the suggestion on the list was abstract character when we're referring to characters, but I don't think we need to resolve this now. This is an editing job to be done.
Correct.
In a second pass.
Correct. Yes.
I can take the action item to go through the document and make sure every reference of character is consistent with the Unicode notations.
That was actually exactly what I was worried about. I want to make sure that we are distinguishing two uses of this term character, and that term character is used very sloppily throughout this document so far, because one of them means essentially, I think, what Unicode means by abstract character, and I say I think because I don't think even Mark Davis knows what they mean by abstract character, but it's roughly the thing that you intended, and for those cases, we can't actually use the Unicode names for them, right? Because the whole point is we've got this thing that the user intends, and it's not an encoding. The user doesn't know anything about encoding. And so for those cases, illustrations or descriptions of the kind of thing that you would type or something like that are okay with me, or even just the name, call it the letter A, not the capital, all capitals thing that they do, small letter A Latin or whatever it is.
Right.
And in the other case, it's actually the particular code point. If we could consistently stick to code point when we mean that, that would be a big help.
Yep.
And we haven't actually been terribly careful about it.
Right.
That's what
I'm. But I just come in here as the linguist. Abstract characters are indefinable. They're sort of platonic ideals of these entities. And as I point out at some point, Unicode deliberately doesn't say what it's talking about here. It says units of information, which could mean anything. So you can't actually identify things as abstract characters. You can identify them, and you have a good example, as code points, and you can by showing the glyph. And you can even use those Unicode names. But they're all sort of half-hearted attempts to reach this platonic ideal. And usually the platonic ideal is not what you're talking about. You're talking about, technical problems which come up in whether you're deciding on which code points to assign or whether glyphs are sufficiently different. So I don't think, although it may seem a bit frustrating to Karen that things are a little bit inconsistent at the moment, I think in many cases that inconsistency has a point because you're talking about different aspects. Don't expect to be able to make them consistent and still have the text as comprehensible. That's what I'm saying.
I was going to say that I strongly agree with that. I would inject, in fact, a third level to the sort of Platonic ideal and the specific code point that you're talking about, and that is the even spookier middle user perception intention kind of problem. Because the reason we have a variant problem in Arabic with the kaf, for instance, is that an Arabic speaker sees the swash kaf and the kaf as the same abstract character, and the Urdu speaker does not. And fundamentally, that's a handy way of thinking about that class of confusable problems that gives us a handle on it, but it doesn't give us any way to refer to these different ways of looking at the thing.
Right.
So for that reason, actually, if you're going to make this path, Steve, I would I'd sort of sort these into three buckets: cases where clearly what was absolutely definitely meant was the abstract character example of like the Platonic thing. Clearly, the other case where what's really meant is the code point, and just change it to code point and give
right.
the code point with the U plus stuff. And then you've got the third bucket, and we actually need to look at those carefully for exactly the reason that Nicholas just said. If we want the text to be comprehensible, we need to think very carefully about how to describe those problems. Because normally, in the Unicode world and in the RFC world, everybody is avoiding talking about the user interface problem, which is why Unicode is so careless about their use of glyph. Sometimes what they mean is abstract glyph, and sometimes what they mean is, the thing that's appearing there on your screen. And what they're really trying to do is say, this is the user interface problem. And what we are really trying to solve here is way down in the protocol, we're trying to solve the effects of a user interface problem that has exposed, maybe this is text, something like this that ought to be included. So what we're trying to do here is expose, is try to solve certain user interface problems that come from the fact that we've got protocol elements that are exposed in the user interface. Right, the domain names are really just a piece of protocol that should be completely irrelevant to the user. And what we're effectively having the user to do is to understand that they've got two things, and they look exactly the same to the user. That's the user interface layer. And from the protocol point of view, they're different. And that difference is what we're trying to bridge.
Okay. So I think when I go through that pass, I'll focus only primarily on the second one. Whereas the code point, make sure all the code points are mentioned in a uniformly the correct way. And then I will flag scenarios 1 and 3 to the extent as much as I can. I did went through this whole, what abstract character means in Unicode, over the weekend, and I still don't understand what it means. So
I would be suspicious if you did understand it.
No, it's very confusing.
So this is Karen. So thanks, Steve, for agreeing to do that. I think we're all, I understand that it will depend on the context and it won't be 100% the same every time. Is that something that you want to try to do today for this draft, or do you want to just own that going forward? I'm not sure what the time commitment is for that.
So when do we need to circulate the draft to the team?
Well, I was aiming for the end of day
today
here in MDR. We committed to sending it to them on Monday. It will be Tuesday for some of them, but it'll be Monday here. So
okay, then I'll commit to go through them today.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve.
This is Francisco. Can I say something?
Please, Francisco. Go ahead.
I was chatting with Andrew before. I don't know if he mentioned this. I disconnected for some point during the call. The DNS review that you mentioned, Andrew, going through the document and do a quick review and correct any DNS concept misuse that are on the document. Is this something that you can do today?
Yeah, I'm trying. So I did mention this to Francisco offline before sending this off to John in particular. I wanted to make sure that we didn't have any DNS, but in particular IDNA boo-boos that would distract him from talking about more substantive issues. Because the danger is that he will start, you know, investigating issues about particular usage of words that will set him off. And I appreciate the value of that, but I can do that as easily and perhaps more neutrally, and then we could get more useful feedback from him. So I am intending to finish a complete review of this document with comments to that effect and specific changes to try to fix those things today. You know, as soon as we're done with this call and so on, then I will go back to it.
Well, that's great.
Can I just come in here? I wouldn't send this first rough and ready draft to John. I think we need a much more complete draft before we get his views. And I would have thought we'd have sent him something after, with a heads up to review it quickly after our face-to-face meeting, and that would be the best use of John's time and best use of John's review, rather than this first cut, which is a cut for discussion with the coordination team.
So this is Andrew. I have no objection to that approach, but if we're going to do that, then we need to tell him now to schedule that time after that meeting, because otherwise there won't be a slot, and you know, we'll come in late, and then he'll feel pressed and he'll be grouchy again. So there's something very nice about this. If we sent him now a note saying, we're doing this, here's the schedule for this thing, and we're going to have this integrated report by pick a date, you know, if you could schedule some time by pick some other date to review it, that would be really good. He would appreciate that, I think, and it would smooth the handling of this, and maybe you'd get a more complete, deeper review rather than I felt a little bit distracted review that we got from some of the other things.
Sure. Francisco, could you take that action?
Sure. Actually, I had the status quo with John is I said we will probably not have time to ask you for a review before the public comment period because of how packed the things are. But just in case, I asked him if he was available for next week, and he said he is. Sorry, this week, not next week. This week. So if we wanted to have a review from John this week, that's possible. If not, currently I have only asked him to be available during the public comment period. After the face-to-face meeting, I don't think there will be much time for review, would there be?
Well, we'd have about a day.
in that case, Francisco, given what you said, I return to our original stuff. Let's ask him for such review as he can do after I've done this sort of quick pass, and say in particular, ask in particular for, you know, large areas that he thinks we've missed, probably actually for that reason, including early preliminary, probably outline level text of the user issues that we think we're going to deal with. Would be very helpful there. And say, you know, look, we know that there are all kinds of terminological difficulties in here, highlight them, but we already know that, so don't focus on that.
Would be
helpful. Well, it's not that. I think if he recognizes that these are things that people know that and they're working on, then he will focus on other issues. But if he thinks that it's something that you completely overlooked, then he's going to take his, you know, what do they call it, a teachable moment, and beat you with it. So I don't want to focus on that because I don't think it's very helpful. I think, you know, what we could get is more valuable feedback on the sort of bigger issues to make sure that he also doesn't think we've missed anything.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, all right. I think that's, Francisco, what we should do given the timing. All right.
Okay, high-level review.
Thank you. If you're going to have any time to have a chat about user experience, we need to finish up now. I'll take an action to draft an agenda for next Wednesday and send it to you, Karen, for and the list for review, and hopefully we'll finalize that over the next 24 hours. And Haley, what actions have you noted?
Sorry, I have a couple more things. Can I?
Oh, of course. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So first thing, I saw something in the list from Nicolas saying he didn't have time to include the response from the case study teams to the public comments. Are we going to do something about that for this draft, or we left that for the next version?
I'm happy to let it go for the next version. I mean, what we promised was a rough and ready first draft by close of business today. So I think that's we do our best, but that gives us time then, and in particular the face-to-face, to begin to tidy things up and address those issues.
But we do want to have some reflection of the public response and the case study group's response to them in this report, ultimately, do we?
We do. Sorry, in my view, we do, yeah.
Good, that's useful.
By the way, there was an action item for the liaisons to provide to send a message to the mailing list highlighting the things that changed from the as a result of the public comment, and I only remember an email from Julie. I don't remember what happened with that action item.
Well, let's put that action item back on the list for the case study liaisons to review the summary and analysis and see if there's anything has changed and to highlight that to our list.
There's nothing changed.
Yeah,
in the report? I mean,
There is. There are some things that changed. For example, the Chinese case, they clarified that they actually don't want mirroring. That was not clear in the report, and they clarified in the response to the public comments.
Okay.
That's the one thing I remember immediately. And that's a very important thing.
So I think the action stands, and if there's no change noted, that's fine. But I think the action stands for each case study liaison to review.
Change the report?
Not change the report. If they change something, remember, we didn't ask them to change the report.
To clarify. Okay. All right.
Exactly. If they...
Bless you.
Right, and this is Julie. I just want to confirm, as far as I can tell, there'll be no change to the Greek report. I'm just waiting for confirmation from Panagiotis and Vigelis, but there was nothing in their responses to the comments that suggested they were changing anything at all.
Thanks, Julie. So that action is completed for the Greek report, but Haley, if you'd note that action for the other case study liaisons.
Okay.
And we need that. And I would say we need a response as soon as possible from the liaisons. That action item was for last Tuesday, and we only have Julie's response so far.
Okay. All right. So, Haley, over to you for the action list, please.
Okay.
I'm sorry. There is one more thing.
Please go.
The bolstering issues section. So what should we do there? What should be the conclusion? Do we leave it? As Andrew suggested, or do we want to clearly say that this is not a variant issue? I think it's important that we decide what to do in this version, because that will be basically what we will have at the end.
Well, I thought we came to a conclusion on this, Karen. Did you not take an action to write a short summary saying basically other issues were identified, they're not typically variant issues, and they're all stuffed in an appendix. Obviously,
no. Dennis, this is the whole spring issues, not the other issues.
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I'm completely confused. Say that again, then. Sorry.
So the whole spring issues section, when we talk about the Greek requirement for Dimotiki and Katarebusa as variants, I was asking in the mailing list whether we should clearly say it. This is not a variant issue. It should not be considered a variant issue because of this and this and this and that. Or should we leave it as kind of open, as Andrew suggested? He was saying there is no way anyone could get another conclusion. But I don't know what do people think.
Well, on the list, I suggested that we nail our colors to the mast on this one, and that we don't believe they are variant issues, and we should say so. But is that politic to do at this time?
Right. So this is Karen. I completely agree with the conclusion. I think what we had agreed on last time was we wanted to expose the issues with treating those kinds of examples as variants, which I think we do in the section that we have. We have five conclusions in this section. We're much more leading toward a conclusion on this than we are in any of the other sections. So I'm comfortable that we are pretty much as far as we should go, in my opinion.
Okay. I think I agree, and in fact we probably, one of the editing paths probably should be to soften conclusions and leave that for a subsequent phase. This, after all, is the issues report.
Yeah.
So we can do that in another path.
I agree.
All right.
So you're saying we leave it as it is now?
I think the discussion suggests that we leave it as it is, and we draw conclusions in the next phase of the project rather than in this phase of the project.
Okay.
All right. This has been a busy call. Francisco, has that dealt with your points?
Yes, thank you.
So, Haley, what actions have you noted for us?
Okay, Kim is to review for accuracy the compilation of IDN survey and have a draft by end of today. Kim's also going to...
Sorry, Haley, I cannot understand what you're saying. Can you speak closer to the microphone?
Kim is to review for accuracy the compilation IDN survey and draft something by end of today. Kim is also going to produce an appendix to the policy survey report.
Can I just ask, this is Karen, that's not going to be included in what we send, correct?
Yes, that's not for today.
So. Okay.
Correct.
Appendix sent to you. And it's only about producing the appendix. I thought I heard two things, and it's only one thing.
I'm sorry, say that again. So the review for accuracy, they're both the same thing, and the appendix to report both the same thing.
Well, I mean, they can be. I mean, the first step is to review for accuracy, and then second step is to turn it into an appendix.
Okay, make those one then. Andrew is going to draft by end of today something for user experience, ready for Wednesday's conference call. Steve took an action item to review other IDN issues for consideration and inclusion in report. Is that correct? Other related issues.
I'm trying to think. What did
no,
we?
No, I was just going to write a paragraph.
Yeah, I've got that down. But I thought you said you're going to take an action item to review.
That was overtaken by the action that Karen agreed to write the paragraph referring to the appendix.
Okay, Karen, I've got you down then for writing paragraph for other related issues section.
Okay.
Steve, we're going to review documents for characters but consistent with Unicode.
To have consistent notation throughout the document. Is that right? Yeah.
So you can review the issues report for consistent notation.
To make sure the characters used have a consistent notation.
With Unicode.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's nothing to do with Unicode, Haley.
Yeah.
It's the use of the word character, code point, and other references to characters. Steve is going to go through the report and clean that up and make it precise. Do I summarize correctly, Steve?
But it's also using the Unicode notation, right?
Oh, thank you, yes.
Yeah, if possible, there's, you include the... I'll clean it. Yeah,
you understand.
I understand, yeah.
Okay, well, whatever I put down there, as long as you understand what it means.
Okay.
Andrew is going to do a DNS review of the document by end of today.
Yeah. accurate?
This is just part of my general review, and yes.
Right. Okay. Dennis, you're going to draft agenda for Wednesday and send to Karen and the mailing list, or internal mailing list.
Yep.
And case study liaisons to review the summary analysis for any changes to the reports.
Yep. And that should be done, I don't know, today or tomorrow. We are well past the deadline that we put in last week.
Today.
And today. And today.
Please.
Okay.
So, Haley, will you chase the case study liaisons for this?
I will.
Thank you. All right. Anything else from anybody?
We need an agenda for the face-to-face.
We do indeed. I'll take an action to start a draft on that, and we'll discuss it on the list.
Thank you.
Anything else?
And this is Karen. If I can just add a general, you know, any corrections or comments that people want to send to me to the draft, they should send today. And then I have the action to circulate that to the coordination team once I've compiled all of those.
You want to circulate at 5 p.m. our time, right?
Yes, that's the goal.
Despite my repeated request for extension.
For 5 p.m.?
Yes. So, Karen, so you're going to send this by 5 p.m. Pacific time?
Yes, that's the intention.
Okay.
Which will be pretty damn good if we achieve this, and I think we will. So thank you, everybody. Francisco, Naila, Andrew, do you want to stay on the line for a few minutes just to talk about user experience?
Sure.
I'll listen in if I may, but otherwise we're done. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Nicholas. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, thanks, Julie. Well, bye, Patrick.
Five seconds, the Wednesday one.
Yeah. Okay, Andrew, you are still on the call?
I'm here.
Have you a clear idea what you're doing on this with this user experience? And I'll let you all talk, and I'll define it after that question.
Well, I think the central issue is to lay things out according to exactly the categories that Francisco suggested on the weekend. You've got these various people. What do they expect to have happen, and what happens when that expectation is tried? And then it's a trade-off, right? What are the advantages of that, and what are the consequences, and what are the disadvantages of that trade-off if that if you've got a failure? Typically, in security things, for instance, we distinguish between false positives and false negatives. The false negative, all that happens is somebody has to try again, but a false positive, somebody gets privilege escalation. And the same thing is important here, you know. How many people are going to be fished as a result of these kinds of things versus how many people are going to find that they have to learn something? How much of that entails the sort of consistency requirement that you were suggesting earlier in your mail? So that is, the framework in which this all works out, and then we've just got a bunch of issues that we need to go through.
Thank you, Francisco. Ayala, does that cover it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Go ahead, Francisco.
No, I don't really have anything to add.
So if I may just add one thing, it is how Kurt has been wanting to steer this whole discussion all along, and I think Kurt, as the VP of Stakeholder Relations, is interested in the interest of all stakeholders, and so I think talking about end users, regardless of who they are, and breaking it down for how it affects them is really how I think his initial vision for how this project progresses.
So my view here is that we actually have a number of different users, and I I expanded the category somewhat over the weekend because I think that at least those six categories that I laid out. I mean, we originally had I think three, right? And I sort of increased it, but I want to distinguish between people. Sort of the basic dimensions that I'm worried about are people who are involved in the registration and operation of the name, and people who are just not involved in the registration and operation of the name, and those break out into different classes of users. You know, people who have technical interests, people who don't, and so on. But I think that if we use those two axes, then actually we get three and three. On each side.
I think your breakdown is perfect. The what we started out was the minimum. We weren't necessarily trying to stick to all just these three types of users.
No, I understand. I do want to make sure we're not, you know, that I'm not inventing problems for us here. But I think if we don't address all of those classes, then we're going to overlook somebody who has a serious issue that we need to face.
Mm-hmm. Francisco, do you have any issues with the breakdown that Andrew introduced?
So on the list of users that you sent, Andrew, how do we get to an acceptable list of users? You expanded quite a bit for more users. Where do we stop identifying users? Because I don't know, we could keep going and adding more people. Perhaps we need to define where are the most relevant users for what we are trying to say here.
So actually, there's a reason that I added those ones. If you think about this in the two dimensions that I just said, people who are somehow involved in the registration or management of the name, then the system administrator of the affected systems, the registrant, the registrars, the registry operators, those are all people who are involved somehow in the operation or registration or something of this name, right? They all have some role on that side. And then the other side is people who are not involved in that, or the other axis is people who are not involved in the life cycle of this domain name registration, but who are somehow affected by it. And it seemed to me that software developers, I mean, they've got a sort of low position on this, but they've got a sort of one-time big expense, because if they are software developers who expect to work with these kinds of systems, they need to be aware of these things. I mean, you know, one of the things about introducing variants is that we are asking, you know, the Mozilla project and the Google Chrome project and all of those people to be able to cope with these things. And so those software developers are important, even though they're not even remotely involved in the operation of the name. The network operators of other networks are going to be getting traffic from this. And one of the important things that that is a principle in operations of the network, although you don't see it much in the IETF world, you see it a lot in the, you know, in NANOG and so on, is when you're introducing services on the network, you have to think about all the consequences for these other networks and what's going to happen to them. And these guys are all going to be, you know, getting funny results from their network logs and so on. And so they're another class of people that we have to worry about. And then I think the third class of people are the end users who are trying to use that name. And that's a very big class of people. But in some ways, they're the people that a lot of the time what people are talking about is user expectations. And my point here is that we've got this other class of users who have to cooperate, and we don't really have any way to talk to them. These other network operators, and most importantly, these software developers, we need to get them to come along and help out because we need their support in this deployment, or else things are going to be a big failure. One of the worst things that could happen, for instance, to somebody who is using a variant name is to start to look like a source of spam, because half of the mail that comes out of their mail server is coming from somebody who is you know, officially not not in that mail server, if you understand what I mean. Right, if you're an Arabic mail server operator and you've got a yes in your name and you don't configure your mail server to be authoritative for both of those names because you've got two yes, right, and one of them is the one that you haven't configured, then other mail server operators are going to start to notice that half of the mail that comes out of, or not half maybe, but you know, some percentage of the mail that comes out of your thing is actually not from your domain. And they will start to think that you are a spammer, that you are an open relay. And then they will start to report you to the SORBS list and all the rest of those people. That is an effect that is certainly an issue related to this kind of network operation in a variant-rich environment that doesn't happen today. And so that's the reason that I wanted to raise those kinds of things. Because it'd be rather bad for you if you were the operator of one of these names and other people started reporting you. And the way that will not happen is if other people can know that you have this variant name and if you have configured your system correctly. It isn't all on you. It's got to rely on other people too. Because you can only give one hello name when you connect.
So I agree that there are more than one user, and the first proposal that was there included three: the user, certainly, the sysadmin, and the registrant.
Right.
I like the your proposal of the software developer. I would say not only about the hosting management systems, but also in general, like you mentioned just
right.
Now, the browser and other applications. But things like race operators, really? I mean, they are the ones counting. if they are the ones that will be requesting the variant, so why do we need to care about that?
I'm not suggesting it's a big deal. I'm suggesting they're one of the people who is affected, and their answer, for instance, can't be, you know, we have this variant, but we don't actually allow you underneath it to do any useful work. I mean, one of the issues here, I have no difficulty, having worked for one of these companies, I have no difficulty whatsoever imagining people inside the company claiming that there's nothing to do and this is all just part of the system that's already there and people just register these things and everything's going to work fine inside the registry. Whereas actually what they need is radical extensions to EPP, for instance, and they need to cooperate in that, and they need to do this in a consistent way, and the entire registrar ecosystem needs to adapt to this change. And if they don't do it in a consistent way, then what they're going to have is what we're going to have is a very, very fragmented market, and that leads to bad effects for registrants. So I'm not saying that, you know, oh, well, we need to take into consideration their worries, but we need to take into consideration the effects on these groups of users, or we will not see the experience that we think we're going to see. I think that registry operators and registrars are a major issue here, and the part of the reason I would argue that is because in the DNSSEC deployment stuff, There was early on a sort of lack of attention on registries and registrars, and it turned out to be a major problem because the thinking that went on there was very, very casual and very surface level. And it turned out that it had all kinds of nasty effects, side effects on them that had customer service effects that they hadn't thought about. And when you pointed these things out to them, they were like, oh, geez, that's sort of a problem. You know, I think that needs to be thought of before people start registering these variant names. For instance, in ICANN's policies, when deciding whether this registry is ready for this variant and actually, you know, can it operate it, there are important questions that need to be asked of those operators. If those questions are not asked, then the registries will not think of it. And some of them will, but some of them won't. And they'll just ignore this problem until they've got a major customer service problem that affects the ability of people, for instance, to do domain name transfers and so on.
Okay, I got it. And the mention that you made to DNSSEC issues, certainly,
I liked your argument, so I agree. Where you sit and where you start, that's fine.
I mean, I don't think this needs to expand any further. I think we've got it covered, because I think we've got the dimensions. We've got all the players on the name management and just, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then we've got three categories of people that are definitely involved, and one of them is end users, which is everybody in the universe. So there's no more expansion.
What about the network operators? I don't understand how they will be affected.
So imagine that I am a network operator, and I have, and one of the things I run is a mail server for my, you know, I'm an ISP, for instance. So I run mail servers for my customers. The current rule is generally to do inbound checks for the hello message. When you get a hello, you get a hello with the name of the server that is sending it to you. About 20% of the network operators actually do a reverse on that to see whether they get an MX for that name. Now, if the system administrator at the source side didn't actually do that because they've got two different ways of handling the mail or something like that, or maybe they just didn't know they had this variant, because one of the problems here that we haven't talked about very much, but one of the problems here is that you can be further down in the tree. If somebody uses a DNAME way up at the top, you can be down in the tree and you don't actually know that you have a variant. And now one of your users configures that way because they've typed it in, and as far as, you know, and what's happened is their mail client has done the transformation for them. It's done the Puny code version of the name and sends this thing out. Now what we have is the possibility that the U-label doesn't, when it goes through U-label to A-label transformation, it doesn't actually match the A-label that your outbound mail server says is it is authoritative for. So this is a network effect problem, right? You've got a large number of independent systems here, and each one of them is configured as far as the person knows to the best of their ability, and yet they're not configured in a way that is completely consistent across the network. When I am the receiving mail operator of that, this looks to me like an open relay. And now I have costs associated with that because I have to maintain my open relay blacklist and all the rest of it.
Perhaps I'm missing something, but isn't this an issue of the sysadmin, and that is, I don't know what we want to call it, but let's call it the sysadmin. Configuring the server that has the variant, the mail server that is sending with two different domain names.
It is an issue there, and it's an issue there because that sysadmin hasn't done it. But it's also an issue at the other end. That is, the receiver of this mail also has work to do now. They have to process this thing. They get this traffic. They need to cope with it, and they need to either handle it or reject it. And there is the potential, if you are the network operator at the other end, to be getting customer support calls because your friend calls you up and says, I just sent you this mail, but it bounced and I don't know why. Or more likely, I sent you that mail last week. What happened? And nobody knows because everybody ignores bounce messages anymore. I think that this does have, it has small effects. It's not a huge effect. But it has effects on those operators, and it has effects on those operators where, if they're very large operators, they are likely to complain that their customer support costs have gone up because somebody else's problem, somebody else is an incompetent sysadmin.
Right, but the source of the problem is that the sysadmin that didn't do his homework.
Well, of course it is, but I mean that's always true. What we're doing is we're introducing another opportunity for me. You know, if I'm a network operator, we're introducing an opportunity for me to get traffic that I otherwise wouldn't get, or that I otherwise would just handle as normal traffic, and now I have to deal with it in my exception queue because of this. So I'm not suggesting that these are people whose problems need to be solved. I'm just saying these are people who are going to see effects. They're going to see traffic that they don't understand. They're going to see traffic that seems kind of weird to them because they may be seeing traffic from two different, you know, from what they regard as two different sites because the A label is two different sites. But as far as anybody is concerned, it's the same site. That's in terms of doing your monitoring, your log analysis, and everything like that. That is an effect. I don't regard it as a big effect. I don't regard it as a fatal effect or one that we need to, you know, solve somehow, except maybe by going to Nanog and, you know, AppNic and all the rest of it and say, you know, you better be aware of this, guys, because this is what's going to happen. I mean, maybe that's all there is to it, but it's still an effect. We're going to catalog all the effects, so we need to consider those users too.
Okay. So I would say for some users, the effect is only there when there are variants in the DNS, while for other users, the effects are all over the place. Doesn't matter if the variants are not or there. Or
absolutely right. And that was part of the reason that I so liked your analysis, because it made me realize more clearly, oh, well, there is this class of effects that are important in one case and are totally invisible for every other case. And so if I am, you know, if I am Global Crossing and I'm thinking about and I'm thinking about the cost to me, I'm going to look at this and I'm going to lobby hard against any of this stuff because there's a potential downside in cost if somebody starts to do this, because I may get traffic that I don't understand and I have to deal with it as an exception. But everything else is just normal traffic, and I can ignore it. So in that case, you've actually got incentives in favor of and against this stuff that will affect the position that people take on it, which is also an issue that, you know, I think we need to expose in this, even though I wouldn't want to put all of that into the report. My point is that if you expose this in the thing and the board has questions from somebody who is saying, why are you doing all of this because it's raising my costs, they now have a tool in which to analyze which cost category we're talking about.
Okay.
Sorry about the dogs.
Fine. No problem.
Okay, deja vu all over again, isn't it, Andrew? We were talking about these sort of things right at the very beginning.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is these problems don't go away, they just kind of move around, but it's useful to think about them in this context in our report, I think.
Yeah. Or as a pessimistic friend of mine says, the sum of human misery is constant, it's just the distribution that changes.
That's right. Well, that may be an optimist. Maybe it's equally distributed.
I'm going to sign off. Thanks a million. We're just listening in. We're fascinated. Talk to you on Wednesday.
Okay. I think we're done anyway, right, guys?
Yep. We're done.
Yes. I think we are in agreement on what to do. So now it's over to you, Andrew.
All right.
Thanks a million. Thanks, Nayela.
Hey.
Thanks, Francisco.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew,
for doing this.
No. That's what you pay me for.
Yeah, which I do have. Yeah, we do have your input. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Left.